This is the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 1st of April 2016. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 1st of April, which this week has been edited by Heather Thorpe Tracy and me. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Deborah Cranmer.
Hello.
And Albie Minns.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Noel Thorpe Tracy. The main headlines this week are legal threat lifted over Silver Hill, baby born in the bath, and best place but too expensive. So, may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Nikki?
Which was legal threat lifted over Silver Hill. Legal pressure on Winchester City Council has eased after developers dropped plans for a judicial review over the Silver Hill development. Councillors were told on Tuesday that the threat of an inquiry had been lifted. However, the council could still face legal action. As previously reported, developer TH Real Estate looked set to contest the ruling that the City Council acted unlawfully in procuring the scheme. It was to challenge Councillor Kim Gottlieb's successful action brought last year in a hearing at the High Court in May. The Chronicle had also told how THRE was set to challenge the Council's decision to terminate the 2004 Development Agreement, DA. THRE had sent the Council a pre-action protocol letter outlining its stance that the Council decision was unlawful because it was unreasonable, irrational, and a disproportionate interference. Now, a meeting of civic chiefs heard that lawyers for the developer have indicated it would not be pursuing judicial review proceedings. However, developers are still considering whether to pursue a claim against the Council for breach of contract to reclaim some of its losses. Council leader Stephen Godfrey said, "I'm content that the challenge wouldn't have been a success and pleased that the developer has recognised that. I think we can get back to dealing with what the council should be dealing with rather than working with our lawyers all the time." He said the legal threat could hang over the council for several years, but said the council had sought legal advice before it made the decision to terminate. This was revealed as senior councillors approved a complete review of the whole Silver Hill site, which will see members of the public asked how they want the area regenerated. The council says this is the first step in moving forward after it kicked the developer off its £150 million project earlier this year. But the council heard it could be another 7 years before any development emerges. The supplementary planning document will set out what should happen to the area to meet immediate and future needs, consulting with local people and businesses. Councillor Godfrey said, "We're starting a new project. This is day one." Cabinet members approved £100,000 for developing the new planning document. The council will look at whether to hire external consultants to look at key issues. Councillor Godfrey said the council could not rely on its previous vision for the site as things had changed. Consultation is expected to take place between August and December, ahead of publication of the draft plans around September next year.
And the second headline is Baby Born in the Bath. He must be a water baby. A couple have told of the moment their son was delivered in their bath. David Fagan Pinchbeck helped wife Sissy through the labour in the bathroom of their Winchester home. They got caught out after Sissy's water broke, leaving David to deliver their third child just 20 minutes later. Sissy had first felt contractions at around 9 o'clock the night before, and the pair went into the Royal Hampshire County Hospital at around 2 in the morning. But they were sent home, as Sissy's contractions were still quite far apart. Even the next morning, her contractions were about 5 minutes apart. But while Sissy, a carer, was taking a bath, her waters broke. David said he was about to take their other children to school when Sissy shouted at him not to go anywhere, and her mum Annie took over the school run. With Sissy in so much pain, she was unable to get out of the bath, let alone to hospital, and was reaching the final stages of labour. Literally, a minute or two later, she was saying, I feel like I need to push, and David, 28, of Fifields Road, Highcliffe, was saying, I'm saying you can't, because no one's here yet. It was panic at first. David drained the water away, got towels, and David Darrell John Fagan Pinchback was born minutes later at 8:50 a.m, weighing 6 pounds 7 ounces, before paramedics arrived. It's definitely a story to tell forever to anyone, said Storman David, who described his son as a ray of sunshine. Sissy said, I really can't believe it all happened so quickly at home. I think it's pretty amazing. It makes it more special. The 29-year-old joked, I'm always in the bath, so it's not a shock. And there is an accompanying photograph of the couple with their little son dressed in a wonderful striped baby grow.
Best place, but too expensive. A week ago, it was hailed as the best place to live in the UK. Now, Winchester has been branded one of the least affordable of cities. New research shows house prices in Winchester are more than 10 times the average local wage, putting it second in the league table of most expensive. The Lloyds Bank study, which has Oxford as the least affordable city, revealed the average cost of a home in Winchester is currently £444,661. This has gone up 39% since 2010, when the average home cost £320,638. In 2005, the figure was £261,320. It comes after Winchester was named as the best place to live in the UK, according to the Sunday Times. However, the Chronicle reported how one councillor said the city is too exclusive. Winchester City Councillor Ian Tate said, for people growing up in Winchester, it is increasingly harder for them to live here. In the ward I represent, house prices well exceed the average house prices. Leader of Winchester City Council, Stephen Godfrey, said, it is an issue that needs to be addressed. Councillor Godfrey said, it is a consequence of Winchester being a great place to live. It means that properties we do have here, there is a demand for them, not only because Winchester is a nice place to live, there is work around here, and it is easy to commute to London, Southampton and the Midlands, and it is very central in southern England to base yourself, and there are schools with fantastic results. It is a challenge. We've got a large proportion on controlled rents. It gives people a chance to live locally and work locally, and we are trying to expand that. And we have to try and support those people who move here. He said the council is trying to solve the problem, and of the 49,000 homes in the city, 8,000 are on social or affordable rent, which he says is higher than other districts. The overall picture in the UK has seen the average city house price rise by 7% from £181,667 in 2014 to £195,107 in 2015. This has resulted in affordability in the nation's cities worsening in the past 12 months from 5.8 to 6.1 times the gross average annual earnings. This is the second successive annual decline in affordability. Lloyds Bank Mortgages Director Andy Hume said, house price rises in the past 2 years have resulted in a deterioration in home affordability in the majority of UK cities and generally widening the north-south affordability divide as the market has been strongest in the south. The UK's most successful cities economically have tended to see the strongest property price rises. Aberdeen, the country's oil and gas capital, has recorded the biggest gains over the past decade, while London, has been the top performer during the economic recovery.
Thank you. And that concludes the headlines. Now we continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, historical items, chronicle comment, first person, Belgarum, your say, and Q&A. This will be followed by announcements and what's on. So, here are the notices. Barnes, Genevieve, Jenny, on 26th of March 2016, in Winchester Hospital, aged 94 years. Beely, Phyllis, passed away on March the 18th, aged 97. Fennell, Helen Elizabeth, aged 76. McGrath, Anne Josephine Bunny, died peacefully on the 20th of March, aged 93 years. Nayrood, John Arthur Lucien, born the 12th of August, 1927, died at home on the 23rd of March. Ricks, Sylvia, on the 23rd of March, 2016, aged 83 years. And now, will you read the Christian comment, please, Albie?
Yes, Christian comment this week comes under the heading Injustice, from parking ticket to Syria. And it comes from the Reverend Graham Bowkett, Rector of the Upper Itchen Benefice and Area Dean of Alsford. Just before Christmas last year, parking in Leeds, I was given a parking ticket. I cannot describe the anguish I felt at the injustice of this particularly malicious persecution of an innocent. Every time I receive correspondence from the cohort of bandits masquerading as a parking collection service company, my heart rate rises. I breathe more heavily, the veins in my neck protrude, the adrenaline pumps around my body. I am incandescent with disdain. I, like Job, Old Testament, just before the Psalms, on the dung heap, outside the city walls, cry, I will not stay silent. I will speak out in the anguish of my spirit. I will complain in the bitterness of my soul. 7:11. And when I cannot sleep, I lament. The night drags on, and I turn until dawn. My body is clothed with worms and scabs. My skin is broken and festering. 7:4. Or at least, that's how it feels. I know what you're all thinking. This reaction is not logical. I've let this all get out of hand. My reaction to this situation is out of all proportion. If, however, you have had a parking ticket, you will understand the feelings I describe. Persecuted, annoyed, victimized. It may not be logical, but it is true. It just makes me so mad. But then I wonder, how mad would I be if I lived in Syria or Afghanistan or Iraq and someone dropped bombs on my home till everything I know is rubble, left homeless and without food or shelter. Perhaps some of my family get killed or injured. I then make a run for it and try desperately to get to somewhere safe. I run for weeks. I take chances, living by my wits, trying to protect what is left of my family. Eventually arriving on the borders of the free world. It has cost us everything we have, our last hope. But the free world is closed, fenced off, shutters down, and stun grenades at the ready. I am turned away. The free world, it appears, is full. Some lucky people before us have made it, but we are out of luck. How much anger would I have? How much disappointment and resentment and rage? How much sadness, sorrow and anguish? Injustice takes many forms. Ask the asylum seeker Ask anyone who is disabled in this country how they feel about justice following the budget, or homeless in Southampton or Winchester. Now that you can be fined for being homeless, what nonsense. Mind, if you are fit and rich, all is okay. Perhaps most of this will not worry you. But I can say to you, a witless man can no more become wise than a donkey's colt can be born a man. Job again. Exactly, I hear you say, exactly. It's all about perspective. After all, isn't it all about us?
Thank you. Now we have 13 letters, starting with one read by Nikki.
Headed Development Woe, from Karen Barrett. Sir, Barton Farm was a much more complicated planning matter than you suggest in your editorial, March 24th. It involved not simply provision of affordable housing, but also ongoing legal challenges over Winchester City Council's non-determination of Carla's application, arguments over reserve sites, and the implications of the redesignation of Andover Road by rerouting traffic through the new development, etc. The whole process was not helped by confusion over imminent planning legislation created by the then newly appointed Secretary of State, Eric Pickles, who eventually upheld Carla's appeal against refusal. Councillor Tate's being brave enough to vote for Barton Farm because of the 800 affordable units makes his recent loan support for Silverhill developer TH Real Estate, who didn't want any affordable housing at all, very difficult to understand. Tory group leader Stephen Godfrey was recently quoted in the national press outlining the difficulties which Winchester is having recruiting staff for necessary jobs because people can't afford to live here. Sadly, things are unlikely to improve while the government leaves delivery of housing and too often infrastructure to the private sector. Legislation to free up the planning process allows developers to use current viability criteria and policy changes to obtain retrospective amendments to conditions on their planning permissions. This surely cast doubt over how many of the 800 Barton Farm affordable units will eventually be delivered. And that's from Karen Barrett, Byron Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
Action on smog. Sir, despite the letters over the last few weeks following David Ashe's photograph of the smog hanging over the city centre, we still have no idea what the council are doing about this. Although Dr. Michael Wilkes, in his letter of March the 17th, confirmed that the pollution levels are illegal, and Phil Gagg, on March the 10th, explained that this is causing serious illness, leading to avoidable deaths, the highways authorities appear to have no policy to address this. I wrote in your columns in November and December last year, asking the county highways for clarification on their policy for addressing the traffic. For addressing the traffic congestion in the city, but to date have received no response. Although I am not a traffic engineer, I am making a few suggestions, as something must be done. Introduce congestion charges like London. Make all council employees and commuters use park and ride. Extend the pedestrian areas and ban all traffic from the city centre. Adopt Ben Hamilton Bailey's shared space strategy for street design. And two options to remove through traffic, which are possibly both unrealistic: a ring road around Winchester or a tunnel under the city centre. Finally, there is, of course, the option of doing nothing. But that would be the most unacceptable of all, especially as these issues will only get worse as more development is planned. I appreciate that this is a very difficult problem and the solution may be unpopular in some quarters, but surely no traffic engineer with a conscience could possibly draw their salary and sleep at night if they refuse to develop a responsible policy to reduce our traffic congestion and protect us from choking to death. the time has come for those in charge of county highways to collaborate with the City Council and tell us how they will address this urgent problem. And that's from Chris Higgins of Edgar Villas, Winchester.
Now, a letter from E. Carter, Appleshaw Close Hairstop, Winchester, under the heading PM Right on Union. Sir, I was encouraged to read the Prime Minister's recent remarks concerning his awareness that only 70 years ago we Europeans were slaughtering each other on the battlefields, which is a timely reminder of why the European Union was founded in the first place. After the continued failure of treaties and alliances to keep the peace, closer union was the best option. Currently, the membership debate is revolving entirely around contemporary questions of immigration, trade deals, and whether ministerial regulations emanate from Brussels or Whitehall. But these problems come and go, and we pay our politicians good salaries to solve them for us. However, they do distract us from that original issue. Some say that it is now so long ago that the original motivation is no longer relevant. But as Mr. Cameron pointed out, 70 years is not that long. It is in living memory. I spent my London childhood surviving the Blitz, sleeping in air raid shelters, running home from school after a raid, worried that my home may no longer be there, and once being carried from a burning building. Later, I made friends with other young adults from mainland Europe who had had to face far worse. The current distressing refugee crisis in the Middle East could happen here again if we are not vigilant. So I shall always vote to stay within an organisation dedicated to the prevention of war, confident that all the perplexing issues of sovereignty, etc., can be resolved in time if only politicians can be made to work towards that end instead of putting so much effort into avoiding cooperation in order to score temporary political points in their own constituencies.
And another side to the story, subsidy increase. Excuse me. Sir, farmers are complaining about the prices they get for their hard work, the EU's red tape and much else. But given the chance for a new, fairer deal by leaving the EU in June, many say they will reject it and stay with what they have. The Common Agricultural Policy, CAP, was not designed to help British farmers and takes little notice of the very different methods used in the UK compared to much of the rest of Europe. It has been said to hinder, not assist our farmers in their work. One of the farmers' biggest worries seems to be the loss of subsidy if we leave the EU. But George Eustace, the UK's farming minister, has confirmed that subsidies will not only be maintained outside the EU, but actually be increased in many cases. This can be done because the CAP currently costs the UK at least £16 billion per year. Some sources even put it higher at £18 billion. Billion, that is. But very little of that actually reaches our farmers in the UK. The bulk of it is spread around the remainder of the EU. Once we stop sending it abroad, we will not only reduce the tax burden on the UK taxpayers, but be able to increase these payments to our farmers. All this, and far less red tape, which merely reduces efficiency and increases costs. There are other benefits too. Outside the EU, animal welfare can be vastly improved, including increasing the maximum penalty for deliberate cruelty to animals, prevent testing by companies on animals, and ban the export of live animals for slaughter, amongst many other improvements currently hard or impossible to enforce under EU rules. Leaving the EU and returning to a British system, run for UK farmers and overseen by the UK government in Whitehall, as it was before we joined the EU, appears to be a win-win situation for all involved. It's hard to see why many farmers, but by no means all, are against the idea. And that from Mike Kennedy, Pine Close in South Wanston.
And another letter on the subject of the EU from James Anderson. Sir, so the English have had far greater continental involvement than most, have they? Quite where Tony Prior, in his letter of March the 24th, gets this version of history is a mystery. The Englishness that he refers to is more a home county's Church of Englandness, quietly resisted further north, as in the Lancastrian toast, the Queen, Duke of Lancaster. If we want the EU to work, then rapid union is required. There are no successful examples of multicultural, multilingual structures, unless one counts China. But just as the central control and insularism of Westminster led to Irish independence and the threatened Scottish independence, its replacement by a much more insular Brussels oligarchy is just the opposite of strength in numbers. Whether one is an inner or an outer, the debate is about both opportunity and our ability to capitalise on it. While our MP Steve Brine bases his position on disruptions during a change, these are short-term and should not be allowed to cloud the decision. The opportunities from membership are by now fully developed, and there really isn't much more to come. We are living it, and the majority are not impressed. As to arguments about active part of a larger whole, where else does a Prime Minister have to plead desperately with an EU President on a trifling matter such as a tampon tax and behave as though some great victory had been won? The governance of the EU is fundamentally flawed and, like every other failing structure, is incapable of righting itself. Change will only come from external events or agencies. The pressure will come from an unexpected direction. It will be bloody, either economically or physically, and I really don't want to be caught up in it when it happens. James Anderson, Wrights Close, South Wanston.
And yet another letter about the EU, under the heading Lying to Stay in EU. Sir, the politicians lied to get us into the EU. Now they are lying to persuade us to stay in. The EU has 500 million citizens. Every one of them has the right to move to England. By the end of this year, Turkey will have effectively joined the EU, and another 75 million people will have the right to move here. The pro-EU politicians claim that we have the right to move to any of the EU countries, but it seems unlikely that many of us will be moving to Turkey or Romania soon. The population flow is one way. Our country has many problems caused by overpopulation, environmental issues like traffic, paving over green country and air quality. Social problems like crime and failing schools and our overburdened NHS. The vote on June the 23rd is very important. A leave vote will allow us to decide who and how many people can move here. We will regain control of our borders and still maintain friendly and free trade relations with our EU neighbours. That letter's from David Abbott, Bridge Lane, Shawford, Winchester.
Thank you for helping finding family, from Ken Gammon. A thank you to the Hampshire Chronicle for publishing my letter, March the 17th, to trace the Robinson family, whom I met whilst a soldier in the King's Royal Rifle Corps based at Peninsula Barracks in Winchester some 64 years ago. I am delighted to tell you the response was magic and I have made contact with my long-lost family Robinson. May I say the people of Winchester are fabulous and I thank them all for helping to find the Robinsons. I have been in touch and can confirm I have found the right people, You have all made an old soldier very, very happy, and I have to be honest, tears were in abundance. People of Winchester, I hold you dear in my heart. God bless you all. And that from Ken Gammon, Goita Coed Road, which is probably pronounced wrong, Treharis, Mid Glamorgan, Wales.
And now Christopher Pankhurst writes on the costs on the subject of the street party. Sir, I am horrified, if not wholly astonished, by the monstrous arrogance shown by Eileen Berry when she refers to a £10,000 for the street party as a drop in the ocean in her article on March the 24th. The amount of council tax during 2014 to 15 for a Band D house was just more than £1,000, so that the entire annual tax for a close of 10 houses will be spent on the street party. Perhaps Eileen Berry should interview all 10 of the residents, many of whom will struggle to pay the tax, and ask if they regard their joint contributions as a drop in the ocean. If people wish to celebrate the Queen's birthday and simultaneously bid farewell to a member of the cathedral staff, that is entirely their affair and no one has the right to question it. That hard-earned council tax should be frittered away on such a trivial occasion, however, is everyone's affair. At a time when resources are so desperately tight that core needs, such as the Sure Start Centre, are being cut to the bone, this expenditure is an outrage. Christopher Pankhurst, Greenhill Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
Now a letter from Rod Youngman, Cromwell Road, Stanmore, Winchester. Under the heading, Charm of Viaduct. Sir, on April the 4th, it will be 50 years to the day that the final goods train trundled across Hockley Viaduct. The last passenger train from Newbury had crossed the viaduct on March the 7th, 1960. The viaduct then slowly began its descent into decay, becoming overgrown with plants and shrubs and partially vandalised with bricks thrown into the nearby River Itchen. A small number of individuals feared that eventually it would be too late to rescue matters, and began efforts to preserve this unique structure with its 32 arches, the longest in Hampshire. Built in 1891, it was discovered that behind its brick exterior, the interior was concrete. At the time, one of the first and largest structures containing this. Attempts were made to have the viaduct listed as of historical importance by English Heritage and for a grant from the National Lottery, but to no avail. At one time, the viaduct had been offered to the army as an exercise in demolition. Eventually, a group was formed, the Friends of Hockley Viaduct, who came together with Winchester City Council, Hampshire County Council, Sustrans, and the Field Fair Leader Programme, and the viaduct was restored. Now cyclists and walkers can cross this mighty structure, stopping to admire the views across the meadows to Winchester. Reading the memorial plaques and description boards, and perhaps pausing to thank those early pioneers whose efforts to save Hockley Viaduct came to fruition.
And this from Eileen Berry, City Councillor for St Barnabas Ward. Wrong at the start. Sir, I felt I must answer Councillor Martin Todd's letter in the Chronicle of March the 24th. There is one thing we ought to remember. It is election time in May, and I quite understand, if you have a grievance, being that you're in opposition, that this is a good time to take advantage of the situation we find ourselves in. That being said, I would just like to bring to your attention, in 2004, the Liberal Democrats were the leading party here in Winchester. I happened to have been at a full council meeting when Mrs. Sheila Campbell, the then leader, announced that she was not putting Silver Hill out for tender. Normally, it would have gone out to three. She decided on the one. It was actually a fait accompli, no choice. It was going to be one developer, take it or leave it. It was voted in by all the Liberal Democrats. In 2010, they again were the leading party and could have turned things around. It was within their power. So the scene was set, and it would appear from Councillor Todd's letter that it was all done by the Conservatives, and everything that has gone wrong has been the Conservatives. Well, it was wrong from the very beginning, and I was only a novice just starting in my career as a councillor, but I knew it was wrong not to put it out to tender. Because it is coming up to elections, I'm not going to say any more. Politically, there is so much more, but what is the point of trying to score points? The main thing is to do the very best that you can for your community, regardless of politics. And that from Eileen Berry, councillor, city councillor, sorry, for St Barnabas Ward, Priors Dean Road, Hairstock.
The next letter is headed Clocks Confusion. Sir, for most people, the clocks changing this month provides a temporary inconvenience of an hour's less sleep. However, for many of the 24,669 people with dementia in Hampshire and the islands, it can affect their sleep routines and may lead to them waking at the wrong time or struggling to get to sleep. Disrupted sleep is just one of the many challenges people with dementia and their carers face. Perhaps your readers would consider joining the 1.25 million people who have become dementia friends to learn more about the condition and the small ways they can help. To find out more, visit dementiafriends.org.uk. Chris Wyatt, Alzheimer's Society.
And under the heading Liberals Bungle, Keith Wood, former City Council leader of Loxlane Sparsholt, writes, Sir, so Councillor Todd believes that the City Council would be better equipped to run major projects were the Liberals in charge. Chronicle letters, March 24th. Is he in Cockney slang having a laugh? The council's major problem at present is Silver Hill. Perhaps Councillor Todd has forgotten that the planning brief for this, as well as the one-sided development agreement with a single developer, were negotiated by the Liberals. This agreement, which was not properly thought through, has been the cause of much of the council's subsequent difficulties. It gave little room for manoeuvre, not setting an end date or an option to leave the scheme without the council having to pay millions. In consequence, the scheme has dragged on until the malign Conservatives tried to sort out the mess in 2014 and did manage to set an end date. This is a classic example of when a scheme is badly set up at the beginning, things will continue to go wrong. If Silver Hill is symptomatic of the brave new world the Liberals are offering Winchester, then heaven help the city.
And from Daphne E. Smith, Cheriton, trouble with ducks. Sir, the ducks on Cheriton Village Green are quite an attraction to this lovely area. When my late husband and I moved to our home a few yards from the centre of the village, we were quite surprised to find two ducks squatting in our front garden. How sweet, I thought, and started to feed them, which was my first mistake. But within days, the word had spread and more ducks joined them and things became out of hand. We knew we should stop putting food out, but we had to get them off the premises. Not an easy task, for we couldn't shoo them without going round in circles. Then we hit on the idea of carrying paper bags, for to ducks, bags meant food. I think they would have followed us to the end of the earth. We lured them back to the green and fled quickly, but had to repeat this performance a few more times before they got the message. And it was during this period that we made our second mistake. We left our front door open on a nice sunny day, and believe me, there's no such thing as a house-trained duck. My third mistake was to pick up a duckling I found waddling down the middle of the road, away from the river. carried it back and popped it into the water, and it would be chased along the riverbank by a very cross mother duck, flapping her wings and quacking abuse. Perhaps it didn't belong to her family, but as the little one was paddling happily with the others, I left her to sort things out and escaped unpecked. The ducks on the green are very well cared for and thrive. Visitors and residents feed them, and generations of children have enjoyed being taken to see them. They are rather silly, comical, and yet delightful creatures, and as long as they stay where they belong, all is well. So it's just a case of not in my backyard or garden. And that from Daphne E. Smith, The Pastures, Cheriton, Alsford.
And that's all the letters, and thanks to all the people who contributed to them. And now we travel back in time with historical items, starting 25 years ago with Deborah.
And that was April the 5th, 1991. Tory attacks teachers. Mr. Gerald Malone, the prospective Conservative parliamentary candidate for Winchester, has condemned threats by the National Union of Teachers at its annual conference to disrupt the introduction of primary testing. Speaking at the executive meeting of the Constituency Association in Winchester, he described the threat as a callous move designed to intimidate parents. Mr. Malone said he believed primary teachers in Hampshire would have more sense than to heed the call for disruption and rejected suggestions that testing would intimidate children. He said, "The scare stories put about by teachers who do not want the trouble of administrating tests are ludicrous." And the second piece is, car park not needed. Winchester does not require an additional 100-space car park at the Peninsula Barracks, agreed city councillors at a meeting this week. A report before the Policy and Resources Committee stated that the city did not need extra spaces in the town and added that the proposed £1.5 million project was poor value for money. Mr. Patrick Davis said the car park was an expensive form of provision. "The idea is not an acceptable use of the Brooks money," he added. Mr. Alan Mitchell also questioned whether the car park would be good value.
50 years, please, Albie, sorry.
50 years ago, April the 9th, 1966. Two items. The first under the heading Terrible Modern Art. The mesmerising effect of modern art on the human mind was referred to at Wednesday's meeting of the Winchester City Council by Alderman Eric Neat. Speaking on a planning committee proposal to erect three abstract sculptured panels as relief on the corners of the new Tower Street car park, he declared, "This is a terrible piece of work. I hope the council throw it out." After a lengthy debate, it was agreed by a majority vote that the consideration of the panels as proposed be deferred until the main fabric was completed. Members variously described them as dust traps and pigeon roosts. And the second item under parking restrictions, Winchester's parking problems may be solved in the near future by the introduction of a controlled parking zone covering the whole of the centre of the city with disc parking only in specially marked areas during the daytime. We have to make sure that streets are used for passage, and it is quite clear that our main task in the years ahead is to get traffic through the streets, Mr. R.H. McCall, the town clerk, said on Tuesday evening when he explained the disc parking proposals to members of the Winchester Chamber of Commerce.
And further back, 100 years, please, Nikki.
April the 8th, 1916, German air raid. The air raid on the eastern counties and the northeast coast on Friday night in last week was followed by a second attack on the northeast coast on Saturday night, by a third on Sunday night on the Scottish coast and the northern and southeastern counties of England, by a fourth on Tuesday morning and by a fifth on Wednesday night. The casualties reported totaled 72 killed and 184 injured. One of the Zeppelins was attacked on Friday night by a British airman at a height of 9,000 feet with several bombs. One, possibly the same raider, came down at sea and its crew of 17 surrendered to a patrol ship. And a second item, a costly slip. At the Southampton County Court on Tuesday afternoon, Mary Elizabeth Patterson, a married woman living in Nuns Road, Winchester, sued John Owen Hodder, upholsterer of the High Street, Winchester, to recover the sum of £42.18 and 8p damages for injuries received while stepping onto the pavement in front of the defendant's premises. Through the negligence of the defendant or his servants in pouring water on the pavement whilst the temperature was considerably below freezing point, so that the water froze and the plaintiff, stepping thereon, slipped and broke her left ankle.
And finally, 200 years ago, please, Deborah.
And that was April the 8th, 1816. Eloping lovers. The lovers of scandal have had ample occupation lately at a county town northwest of the metropolis, recounting the particulars of a faux pas detected there. It appears that the amorous parties, having eloped together, were pursued by the injured husband, who, on overtaking them, had ocular demonstration of his ribs' infidelity. The lady, on her knees and in tears, implored forgiveness for herself and her paramour, while he, in the same supplicating posture and with the most woe-begone countenance, seconded her entreaties. The afflicted husband for a time stood motionless, but the eloquence of tears finally triumphed. The good-natured man shook hands with the seducer, and the trio actually returned home in a post-chaise together. And finally, on the hoof, fatally. A few days since, in Leeds, a cow escaped from the shambles and, being pursued by the butchers, actually ran up three pairs of narrow, crooked stairs and took shelter in a corn chamber in the Rose and Crown Yard marketplace. From this retreat, it was found impossible to draw the poor animal alive, and she was accordingly shot on the premises and afterwards carried off.
And now back up to the present, now with Albie, who has the Chronicle comment.
And the Chronicle comment in the 243rd year is as follows, under the heading Time for a Sensible Discussion about EU. Amid the fevered debates surrounding the forthcoming EU referendum, it could be considered unusual that the question of time has not yet come to the fore. It cannot be long, however, before someone in the Brexit camp remembers that there is still a concerted campaign in some quarters to align the clocks in the UK with time on the continent. Certainly the springing forward of the clocks in the early hours of tomorrow morning for the start of British summer. Time is likely to bring the matter to the minds of those on both sides of the debate. The arguments for leaving British clocks set to summertime has been around for, well, some time. As we are no longer an agricultural nation, goes the thinking, why should the majority of people have to go to work in the dark and return in similar conditions just so that farmers can work in the fields? That reasoning may be wrong-footed. Farmers do, after all, work to the rising and setting of the sun. But it makes sense to some. Such a move would align the UK with the near continent, however. And to a clock labelled Berlin time, in some mischievous circles. Changing the present system smacks too much of becoming too European for those opposed to the EU to accept, it seems. Like many of these issues, what is required is sensible discussion.
Thank you, and that brings us to First Person, which is read by Nikki.
And this is by Joanna Lewis, headed The Joys of Train Travel. Can the guard contact the driver? It's the announcement that every commuter dreads. It chills your blood from your head to your toes. Unless you've been standing without a seat from Waterloo, then you've got no feeling below the knees anyway. It usually means there's going to be one heck of a delay. And it's been happening more and more. Points failure, train in front broken down, tree on the line. Anyone who is a regular commuter to London didn't need to read the official statistics published recently on reliability and punctuality to know that the levels of both over the last few months have sunk faster than George Osborne's leadership ambitions. What a truly grim couple of months it's been. I know what you're thinking at this point, dear reader. We commuters have good jobs and we flit back and forth between the metropolis and a wonderful part of the country. True. But we deserve some sympathy, surely. Take these ridiculous delays during the evening commute. Engineering work means getting a bus from Basingstoke for all stations beyond 4 nights of the week. Why this time of the year and why weekdays? The amount of passenger information has been sparser than a budget hotel minibar. At the start of the madness, I innocently caught my usual train home at 19:35, only to find I should have got a later one to Basingstoke. So although I'd left a work's due risibly early to get home in reasonable time, early start the next morning, etc., I finally got into Winchester close to midnight, seemingly having been rerouted via Penzance. And what's wrong with all the onboard overhead displays? I've not been in one carriage recently that can show the time other than 00:00. Doesn't inspire confidence. Is the rolling stock so middle-aged and pooped, like many of its occupants, I happily put myself in this category, that it's falling apart? What about safety? We are hurtling along tracks with engineering works, following a pattern that seems to be based on the hokey-cokey. You put your main line out, in, out, in, out, shake it all about. Call me old-fashioned, but when we've been stuck in the dark, in the middle of farmland, for 20 minutes, and the guard announces, "We're now going backwards, up the down line, in order to cross over to the other line." I want to hide under the seat, phone home, or clutch the hand of the man next to me, sometimes all at once. If I want a thrill at high speed, I'll pay to go whitewater rafting down the Limpopo. I don't want to see my life flash in front of me outside Mitchell-Dever on a Wednesday night. As ever, of course, the frontline staff have been heroic. The flourishes of humour have rallied us all. Passengers on board this 1905 train to Weymouth who want to alight at Woking, get off. 50-something male trolley dollies working the aisles offering tea, coffee, me. On one particularly rainy morning, the overhead information board flashed passengers to take care and not leave behind their umbrella. Ella, Ella. On a serious note, however, it's been great to see South West Trains stepping up its partnership with the Samaritans to help address the saddest rising statistics of all, the number of fatalities on the track. Posters on platforms and stations target most at risk, young, salaried men, on Monday mornings. It puts our delays, missed meetings and late appointments into perspective when we think of those tortured souls, grieving families, plus the staff who deal with these harrowing incidents. So it doesn't really matter. But it would be nice if next year the Sunday Times researchers for the Best City Guide, instead of perhaps flying in by helicopter, they travel down in February, standard class, and without a seat on the 1805.
Deborah has an item from Belgarum, an alternative look at the news.
And this is entitled Queen Eating Humble Pie. The Queen Inn in St Cross has responded to the recent Belgarum story about the lack of pies on its menu in National Pie Week and proved to be good sports at the same time. "Hear all about it, the Queen Inn had no pies, despite being National Pie Week Day. Clearly reported by Belgarum spies in no uncertain way. Chef Richard had in fact created a pie with filling fantastic, but was forced to remove the pike eel and sweet chestnut grated as soggy pie bottom issues were drastic. The proliferation of national weeks and days is our excuse for not knowing all. We now are happy to join the national event craze, as in March, month of the bed doth fall. In fact, when Googling, you will find that some freak has decided that days merit strange events to boast. Chocolate-coated Raisin Day falls in this week, as well as National Near Miss Day, and one for Melba Toast. Apologies to Belgarum from the Queen is all we can say. Come and celebrate with us on days not national, but local. Annual Beer, Wine, Cider and Gin Festival days, 29th of April to 2nd of May. Now this is a special time for our community to be social. And it's signed, Wordsworth.
And now we come to your say. Several members of the public were asked if the recent Brussels terror attack would change the way they behave. Albie has the answers.
Well, Katie Whitehair, 34, of Alliston Way, Whitchurch, a care assistant in a nursing home, said, "The chances are very small, but it would probably change where I go on holiday." Marie Woodhouse, a homemaker of Battery Hill, Stanmore, Winchester, said, "Everyone lives on the edge because you never know who's going to get hit. I would be a lot more aware." Ross Bilsland, 19, of Stanmore Lane, Stanmore, Winchester, a shop sales assistant, said, "You never know if it could happen over here. I'm sure if it did, it would a lot more. I would be a lot more cautious. You have to try not to be intimidated." And Barry Pearson, finally, 82, of Chatham Road, Stanmore, Winchester, retired, said, "Not at all. We just carry on with life as normal. We still go abroad. You can't do anything about it. It's showing the terrorists that they won't affect us."
And Nikki has an interview with another Wintonian about her view of the city.
Yes, Q&A, My Winchester. And this is Sue Morgan, 65, of Cranworth Road, Full Flood, retired. Volunteers at the Winchester Oxfam store, shares her favourite things about Winchester. And the various questions. What's your favourite restaurant or cafe? River Cottage. River Cottage Canteen in Abbey Mill Gardens. Favourite pub or bar? The Full Flood Arms, Cheriton Road in Full Flood. Favourite shop? Form in Parchment Street. Favourite view? Looking down towards St Giles Hill with the cathedral in the background. Favourite building? The Hospital of St Cross. Who or what is Winchester's biggest icon? King Alfred's statue. What's Winchester's best kept secret? The many festivals throughout the year catering for different age groups and interests. What's the best thing about Winchester? The fact that it's small but has a sense of community, and that it's got a great sense of history, and it's also beautiful with the river and historic buildings. And the worst, traffic, pollution and litter. What's the most overrated thing about Winchester? Perhaps the independent shops, because I don't think there's that great a range and a lot of them are being driven out. Is there one thing you could change about the city? What would it be? Sorry, if there was one thing. Better walking and cycling routes in the city centre and surrounds. It's very difficult to cycle safely. Describe Winchester in a sentence. It's historic, intimate, with a diverse range of restaurants and a great sense of community.
Now, this week's announcement, starting with what's on. On Tuesday, the 5th of April, in Winchester Cathedral, there's a lunchtime concert at 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. Lucy Humphreys on the trumpet, and it's free, but there's a retiring collection. It says everyone's welcome. And there are three things at the Theatre Royal which might interest you. There's on Saturday the 9th of April at 7 p.m. Strictly Come Joking with Barry Cryer and Colin Sell. Colin Sell, famous from one of the comedy programmes, isn't it? But that's £22, so I don't know about that. Saturday the 21st of April, Swansea City Opera is presenting La Boheme. And early information from now until the 2nd of May, Winchester Chamber Music Festival. Tickets and programmes for all those things are from the Theatre Royal on 01962 840 440. That's 01962 840 440. Lighting Up Time ended this morning at 6:40 a.m. and begins at 7:39 p.m. On Wednesday, 6th of April, it ends at 6:29 a.m. and begins at 7:47 p.m. So the days really are getting longer. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recordings you have received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. 01962 870 370. Now we continue with items of general news, starting with Deborah, please.
And this is entitled D-Day Veteran Awarded France's Highest Honour. And there's a lovely photograph of Robert Mannering, who's received the Légion d'Honneur from France in recognition of his service in World War II. And he's got all his other medals, and then he's also holding up the new French one. In his own words, he was simply doing his duty. But now Robert Mannering's distinguished Royal Navy service, which spanned three decades, has earned him the highest honour that can be bestowed by France. The country has recognised his efforts during one of the most decisive chapters of World War II. The 96-year-old served in the Royal Navy for 34 years, from 1935 to 1969. And during that time, he served on a number of ships, including HMS Delhi, HMS Cottesmore, and HMS Cumberland. His career in the Royal Navy took him across the world, from action near North Africa in 1942, the D-Day landings, and in 1944, and then on to Burma in 1945. The father of two served as a navigating officer and had his first taste of combat on board HMS Delhi in 1936, when the ship was sent to protect merchant vessels off Barcelona. While the ship was anchored, it survived a bombing raid. In 1942, he was mentioned in dispatches as HMS Cottesmore intercepted and destroyed a German merchant ship. During the D-Day landings, HMS Cottesmore was operating between Gold Beach and Omaha Beach and escorted a convoy of ships across the channel. The ship was also involved in the bombardment of the shore to prevent German guns from firing at landing forces. Mr. Mannering said, "There was no excitement. We had a number of operations over the years. It was part and parcel of naval life. Even when you suddenly get a bombing or something like that, you can't afford to lose your concentration." After D-Day, he went to Burma in 1945, where he was on board HMS Cumberland. Whilst there, he was among the forces who were spoken to by Field Marshal Montgomery during a victory parade. Mr. Mannering said, "We were ready to bombard the islands off Burma where the airfields were, but then the Japanese war ended. So I went to Rangoon for the victory parade." Mr. Mannering retired from the Navy in 1969 and became a lecturer. He had two children, Pippa and Nikki, and has three grandchildren and two great-grandchildren. He retired in 1985 and now lives in Winchester to be closer to his family. Speaking about receiving the Légion d'Honneur, he said, "We are living as we are now because of what people like me did before you. It would have been a very different life if the Germans had taken over. I don't feel particularly proud. It is part of my service, and for what I did, I was rewarded. I'm not the only one. It's just part of my naval career. We all did our duty."
And now an item under the heading, Families Enjoy Cracking Easter Day Out. It was an Easter egg hunt to remember. Winchester City Mill was packed with parents and children over the Easter weekend. More than 1,000 people, including 300 children, visited the venue over 3 days to enjoy the hunt organised by staff at the National Trust. Families worked together in teams to find clues, and their work was rewarded in chocolate. Naomi Barker, learning officer at Winchester City Mill in Bridge Street, said, "There was lots of enjoyment from parents and children. We got lots of comments that they had to think about it and work as a family. I'm an ex-primary school teacher myself, and I like to make sure it is an educational, even if the children do not realise that they are still having to write letters and numbers and answer questions. It is all good learning." An egg hunt was also staged at the National Trust's Hinton Ampner House and Garden near Cheriton. And there's a lovely photograph of 10 children, 5 of whom are holding bags, which no doubt contain the chocolate, and 5 of whom have no bags and are looking rather perplexed.
Storm Katie leaves a damaged trail behind. Hampshire was hit by the biggest storm of the winter when winds of up to 106 miles an hour were off the coast. Storm Katie ripped across the county on Sunday night and early Monday, bringing down trees, knocking out power and causing flash floods. A gust of 106 miles per hour was measured at the Needles on the Isle of Wight, the highest in the country. But along the south coast, winds reached between 60 and 80 miles an hour. A deluge of rain saw more than an inch, 26 millimetres, nearly half the month's average rainfall, fall in Middle Wallop in just 16 hours. High winds brought down trees across the region, including Petersfield Road in Highcliffe. A tree crashed down at the Weirs, close to the Bishop on the Bridge pub. On the High Street, Shoon's Shoe Shop was shut when part of its roof was ripped off, landing in the street. In Easton, the Mesger family had an unpleasant awakening when a neighbour's Douglas fir was uprooted at 2 a.m. on Monday. Jude Mesger said, "The tree landed on part of our house where 5 young adults were sleeping. Miraculously, all escaped, just frightened and shaken." There were also power cuts in parts of the Meon Valley and on the Isle of Wight. Across the south, more than 100,000 homes lost power. Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service attended more than 30 call-outs overnight, including an incident where a tree fell into a house in Portsmouth. On the railway, passengers faced major disruption after a tree fell on the line, blocking services between Brockenhurst and Bournemouth. And there are several pictures, including the fallen Douglas fir on Mesger family's garden at Easton, which is massive. I mean, it was some wind to have picked that up and thrown it on the ground. And again, large branches and trees that have fallen on the weir by Bishop on the Bridge. And the great clunk of roof that's landed right outside Shoon on the High Street.
Got a tree down.
I know, because we live in a wind tunnel. I'm thinking, what?
When it turned into a wind tunnel.
Right. Microchipping. Pet owners can attend a microchipping event in Winchester on April the 1st. The event at Mole Country Stores in Winnall, running from 10 in the morning till 2 in the afternoon, comes just days before the deadline to microchip dogs comes into force on April the 6th, which could see owners fined up to £500 if they fail to comply. Animal Welfare Officer at Winchester City Council, Dave Griffiths, said, "We collect about 200 stray dogs every year, and whilst a large percentage of dogs are microchipped, when we contact the microchip database, we often find that the owner's details are incorrect or out of date. For example, we collected 14 strays in February and 11 were microchipped, but only 3 of those linked to the correct owner's details. A microchip is a transmitter about the size of a grain of rice. It's implanted under the dog's skin between the shoulder blades. The chip bears a unique number which is displayed when the scanner passes over it. When a database operator is contacted and given that number, they will be able to find the details of the registered keeper of the dog. And there is a note to say that apparently guide dog puppies have all been microchipped since the year 2000. But if in doubt, contact them for advice.
Traders, market should stay put. Broadway will be too congested. We should stay where we are. That is the verdict of market traders in Winchester who say the presence of the market is overwhelmingly positive. As reported in the Chronicle, some city councillors at the Winchester Town Forum called for the markets to move from the High Street to the Broadway. They were speaking after a specially commissioned review carried out by specialists from the retail group. The report noted that most consumers questioned are big fans of the market and say it adds vitality and vibrancy to the city. But some independent traders warned how the future of Winchester High Street is jeopardised by the spread of market stalls. The current programme of markets was introduced to add vitality to the High Street at a time when cities around the country worried about the effects of the recession. Face-to-face research carried out in the central shopping streets of Tourism South East at the end of 2011 found that 94% of local residents and 95% of non-residents felt that the markets made the experience of visiting Winchester more enjoyable. Some 85% of local people and 92% of visitors felt that markets added to the vitality and vibrancy of the city centre. Traders themselves believe the markets should stay. One who spoke to the Chronicle, but asked not to be named, said, "I talked to the shop managers, and they are for the market. Their takings are up, and there is a nice balance between shops and markets. Winchester is very lucky because other towns are dead, and the markets freshen the place up." Owner of Soul Delish, Christian Wagheeren, said, "I think a move to the Broadway would be too congested. This is the perfect place for the market. It is a good location, and every day it is different. Some days it is flat. Some days it is very busy. I would not change it at all."
Top authors booked in for Literary Festival. The Alsford Literary Festival is back for another year, and well-known authors have been added to the bill. With an impressive lineup of major figures from theatre, history and literature, the one-day event marks the 50th anniversary of Alsford's Historical and Literary Society. Authors Robert Hardy, John Julius Norwich and Edna O'Brien will all give talks about their work on Saturday, June the 4th. Hardy began his career as a classical actor, playing Henry V on stage and in BBC TV's Age of Kings in 1960. This sparked his interest in medieval warfare. He wrote and presented a TV documentary on the Battle of Agincourt and wrote two important books about the longbow. Rounding off the day, the fourth and final session will be jointly presented by Dolores Willis and the festival compere, John Miller. John collaborated with John Gielgud and John Mills on their memoirs and has written biographies of Judi Dench and Peter Ustinov. A whole day ticket is priced at £25 and will give admission to all four sessions, with single session tickets costing £10 each. Tickets can be purchased by phoning 01962 733 380. That's 733 380.
Unique dig ends at leper hospital. Dr. Simon Roffey of Winchester University reports on a unique 7-year excavation. 2015 saw the culmination of work on one of Winchester's most important and intriguing medieval sites. Since 2008, extensive archaeological excavations have been conducted at the former medieval hospital and leprosarium of St Mary Magdalene at No Man's Land east of the city. Directed by Simon Roffey and Dr. Phil Martyr of the Department of Archaeology, University of Winchester, this work represents the first wide-scale modern excavation of a medieval English leprosy hospital and cemetery. Analysis of the medieval cemetery indicated skeletal evidence for leprosy in over 85% of examples, a much larger percentage than had previously been recorded in Britain. Excavations at Winchester have also provided a valuable insight into both the form of early institutional care and the nature and status of its community from a relatively early date. The evidence confirms that the hospital is one of, if not the, earliest excavated example from Britain, if not Western Europe. Moreover, it is argued that the leprosarium may have represented a particular form of religious community, and one that emerged as a direct response to the spread of leprosy, which was only properly formalised in later years. This idea is further supported by recent genome research using the samples from St Mary Magdalene in comparison with other European examples. This research has revealed a Middle Eastern origin for medieval leprosy and suggests that the disease spread during the Crusades. It might also be linked to an increase in pilgrimage and the establishment of international routes, especially to the Holy Land during this time. The earliest documentary reference to the hospital dates to 1148. However, the archaeological evidence for the first phase hospital is between 1070 to 90, predating the documentary records. This evidence comprised a small masonry chapel, a range of timber structures, a planned cemetery, and a large cellular structure, probably used for the long-term storage of food. The later medieval period witnessed the rebuilding and extension of the chapel, the construction of a masonry infirmary with a master's lodge, the commissioning of a new cemetery, and also evidence for a claustral range and associated features, including a stone-lined latrine and substantial pits, indicating certain level of sanitation and hygiene management. The site was later converted to almshouses in the 1480s before being systematically dismantled in the 18th century. The site later became the location of the Mourne Hill First World War military camp. Work is now commencing on writing up and the post-excavation analysis of materials from the hospital, which will likely take several years.
Jackson follows in Dad's footsteps. Winchester's Chris Jackson is following in his father's footsteps, exactly 50 years after his father and Trojans legend Alan Jackson represented Great Britain for the first time. Chris is playing for England in the 40s Hockey World Cup, ironically also in Australia. He was due to pull on an England jersey for the first time when the Six Nation tournament began in Canberra yesterday, writes Mike Vimpany. England face Malaysia, New Zealand, Barbarians, Australia and the USA in a testing week-long over-40s competition. Chris Jackson described it as a great honour to be chosen by England, whose selectors were impressed by his outstanding form for Winchester in South League hockey in recent seasons. Chris admitted he picked up the hockey bug from his father at a very early age. I had a stick in my hand almost as soon as I was able to walk, he laughed. The first stick was shaped more like a boomerang. The family lived and breathed hockey, and I couldn't have had a better mentor, as Dad was one of the best players in the country and a main player in that formidable Trojan side of the 60s and 70s. Recently, he's been a tower of strength for Winchester, who have climbed out of Hampshire Regional League hockey and back into the South Premier Division 2. Chris's achievements sit well with Father Alan, who was among the outstanding players his era and represented Great Britain 6 times in international matches against Australia half a century ago, back in 1966. It was all grass pitches in those days, and we played on the Australian Test cricket ground outfields, which were hard and bumpy, he recalled. Alan picked up his first hockey stick as a 13-year-old schoolboy, and only last season, at an amazing 75 years of age, hung up his boots after giving a lifetime to the game. And there's a photograph of Chris and Alan, both in their England tracksuits and with crossed hockey sticks in front of them, looking very happy indeed.
Our top midwife recognised with award. A Hampshire midwife has been recognised as one of the best in her profession in the country. Kim Morley, who helped a mother with epilepsy through a difficult childbirth at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester, has now scooped the national title of Midwife of the Year. The only epilepsy specialist midwife in England, Kim was entered in the Royal College of Midwives annual midwifery awards by Claire Cobbold. These awards highlight work done by exceptional midwives across the country, and Kim's award particularly recognises care given to mothers. Claire and her husband from Surrey sought out Kim after a poorly supported first labour, which led to post-traumatic stress for both parents. Whilst they had a healthy little girl, the idea of going through it all again was terrifying, and they even tried to adopt a second child. But they were reassured when they met Kim from Dibden Purlieu, who helped them with their second child, Benjamin, who was born last year. Claire said, "She's incredible and doesn't realise how amazing she is, so this is a great way to acknowledge all she has done for us and other women with epilepsy." She added that Kim had given the reassurance and confidence she needed, and her second birth had been an amazing experience. Award sponsor Emma's Diary, a parenting club for expectant and new mums, received a record 671 nominations from mothers across the UK. All entries were put through a rigorous judging process by a panel from the Royal College of Midwifery and Emma's Diary, culminating in 7 regional winners. Kim, who has built up her experience over the last 16 years, said she was honoured to go on to win the national title. She added, "I'm so proud of Claire and her family and find it difficult to articulate just how much this means to me." And there is a photograph of Kim Morley with the most wonderful smile, who would give you comfort and confidence without any doubt.
Treatment trial was a success. Upgrades to a Winchester mental health unit have benefited elderly patients, counsellors were told. The Stefano Olivieri unit in Melbury Lodge is treating anxiety, depression, and schizophrenia in the elderly as part of a trial. Previously, the centre, run by Southern Health NHS Foundation Trust, only treated organic conditions like dementia. "We feel that it's been a success," consultant psychiatrist Dr. Tracy Eddy told Hampshire County Council's Health and Adult Social Care Select Committee on Tuesday. "We feel that people are now admitted to the wards according to the needs that they present with."
Cycling firm takeover. A Hampshire firm which organises cycling holidays has some new owners in the saddle. Bicycle Beano's Cycling Holidays has been taken over by Winchester couple Andy and Madeline Key. The company has been running holidays in Wales and rural England since 1982, building a loyal customer base, including the Keys. Andy, 53, is leaving his job with Hampshire County Council, where he helps to run the website. He designed the route for the annual Wantage to Winchester cycle ride and has also run cycle tours on behalf of the CTC, the National Cycling Charity, and managed the development of cycling routes for key camp holidays, now a part of Eurocamp. Bicycle Beano cycling holidays offer a single comfortable base in a large old country house or residential retreat from which carefully planned two-wheeled excursions are run. All the catering at the holiday bases is vegetarian, hence the name Bicycle Beano. Although almost every cycle trip involves a pub lunch where no dietary restrictions apply. Andy said, a Bicycle Beano isn't a training camp or an endurance test. It's a chance to relax, unwind, and spend time exploring some hidden corners of Britain in one of the best ways possible, on a bicycle. Often we'll encourage everyone to stop to admire the view or explore a ruin or peek inside a quirky village church. Whether you do the shortcut, main route, or detour, we all aim to have lunch and tea together. People who cycle at different speeds don't have to stick together, but can still meet up en route. Holidays planned for this year include weekends in Mid Wales, Shropshire, and Oxfordshire, and longer breaks in the Wye Valley and Somerset. And there's a photograph of Andy Key with his bicycle, drop handlebars, standing in a park in beautiful sunshine. Just the thing to do.
Lucky escapes in horror crash trio. Several motorists have escaped serious injury after three crashes near Winchester over the Easter weekend. Six people were taken to hospital following a crash on the A31 between Winchester and Alresford, which was shut in both directions by police at the 272 junction due to a collision involving two vehicles. All three emergency services were sent after the crash at 4:40 p.m. on Good Friday. The road was closed for some time while police investigated the incident and arranged for the debris to be removed. A South Central Ambulance Service spokesman said four people were taken to Southampton General Hospital and two went to Basingstoke. The spokesman said none of the patients was thought to have suffered life-threatening injuries. Only a mile up the 272, a driver had a lucky escape after his car rolled several times in a dramatic crash. Firefighters had to free the man who was trapped in his car, but he only sustained minor injuries. The incident happened on the westbound carriageway of the 272 at Chisfoot Head, near the Matterley Bowl. A witness who called police said the vehicle, a blue BMW, had come off the road and rolled several times. Crews from Winchester and Eastleigh attended and freed the man in his 60s from the vehicle at around 9:30 p.m. on Sunday. Both sides of the road were closed for around an hour, causing queues. Hail was blamed for the third incident on Sunday morning. Firefighters were called after a car ended on its side after coming off the A303 eastbound at Bullington Cross, north of Sutton Scotley, shortly before 10:30 a.m. The two-vehicle crash also involved another car, which remained on the highway. A fire engine from Sutton Scotley, two from Basingstoke and a heavy rescue vehicle from Basingstoke attended, though no one needed to be cut free. And if you saw the photograph, you would not believe no one had to be cut free. It is a tangled mass of trees and hedge, the car smashed to pieces, a couple of men just standing there chatting about it, I think.
And another spotlight on the EU. The spiritual dimension of the European Union will be explored at a referendum conference in Winchester this weekend. Questions will be asked at Winchester Business School, and they include whether the Union can recover its soul or Christian values. Speakers at the all-day event on Saturday, April the 9th, include Jonathan Chaplin, director of the Kirby Lang Institute for Christian Ethics and co-editor of God and the EU, Ben Ryan, author of Soul and the Union, and Guy Milton, the EU Council's head of media relations. The politics of the referendum will also be discussed with Mike Biden of Hampshire's European Movement, Adrian Pabst of Kent University and others. The conference, named Keeping Faith in the EU? Takes place from 10:30 in the morning until 4:30 in the afternoon and is hosted by Winchester University's Centre for Theology and Religion in Public Life. And the business school is on the West Downs campus, Romsey Road, Winchester.
Firms prepare Woodland Path. Several businesses spent last Friday morning at Shepherd's Downs School in Compton, Winchester, to prepare a woodland walk for children. The event was organised by Community First as part of their employee volunteering scheme. Janet Duggan from Community First said, "The third Friday Community Day came about after attending the first Friday business group and realising that smaller businesses in and around Winchester didn't have the same opportunity to volunteer as a group, unlike larger corporations. We hope that the businesses have made some small contribution to the fantastic work the school is doing and will enable the children to have full access to their woodland path. Corporate volunteering has been around for a few years, and it is a great way of bridging charities, schools, as well as other community groups with the business sector."
And that concludes our extracts for this week. But to clear up my senior moment earlier, Colin Sell is the comedy pianist on I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue, the antidote to panel games on Radio 4, and he's appearing with Barry Cryer at the Theatre Royal next week. Thank you to Heather Thorpe-Tracy for her editing work, and thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation volunteers, and thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Deborah Cranmer.
Goodbye.
And Albie Minns.
Bye.
And from me, goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. When you've finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.